down, I just know God is a mean son of a gun. See, that's the pagan view. I just know it. So, there's something worthy I've got to do. Something worthy we've got to do? No. You see, there was something worthy God had to do. That was the worthy thing. You can read about that in Revelation, in Romans 5, around verse 18 and 19. It says, everyone was saved the same way, by one righteous act of one man, the Messiah Jesus. Now, if that's how I got saved, how can I brag that I'm a Christian and I've been saved? See, how did I get saved? By one righteous act, by one man that was righteous. And wasn't me. I'm not that man. How can I brag, Ron, that I am a Christian when the way I got out of this mess that I was in through my sin was one man did one thing right. There was a man before him, Adam. One man, he did one thing wrong and got all of us in all this mess. Because we inherited his rebellious nature from him. This is the dream, and we will tell its interpretation before the king. He said, okay, step one, I told you the dream, that's it. That's what you said. You wanted to know the dream, you got it. Nebuchadnezzar's jaw is probably halfway down to his knee by now. And he says, now I'm going to tell you the interpretation. Did you notice that when you really hear from God, supernaturally, how fast you can regurgitate what's happening? See, when you get a supernatural word from God, boy, I mean, shunk! He got that thing done in nothing flat. Verse 37, thou, O king, are a king of kings. Notice he didn't say he was the king of kings. He said, you are a king of kings, i.e. Babylon had conquered many nations, and therefore there were many kings under his authority. He was a king over many kings. Okay? For the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. Ooh! Tilt. Definitely not Babylonian doctrine. Remember, we learned last week that the Babylonians believed that the gods came from the earth, that their chief god, Marduk, was called the Great Mountain, and that their gods came from the sacred mountain of the earth, old Mother Earth, and they called the earth the Mountain of the Lands. And so they were evolutionists, but they one-upped modern evolution. But not really, because modern evolution carried along with humanism ends up the same place. You finally evolve and reach your full human potential and become a god. Now, you say, oh, but not a creator god. Oh, no. They don't believe in a creator. We're just here by random chance. You become a god in that you have reached the ultimate limit of human potential. And that teaching, of course, has invaded the church. Live up to your full human potential. May I set some of you free in the name of the Lord? Machines made out of vanadium and titanium steel, when you try to operate them at 100% efficiency, they crater. How much more you and me, old fellow flesh and boners and flesh and blood. You hear me? So if you're trying to drive yourself, you know, like that old machine, you're going to crater. Don't get mad at God when you get bleeding ulcers, when your hair starts falling out, and your wife leaves you because you were so busy she never saw you anyway. What's the diff? And the kids, they don't even know who you are. And you lie like a dog to yourself saying, I'm doing it for my family. No, you're on an ego trip. You're going to die and they won't even know who was in the casket. Who was that masked man? You hear what I'm saying to you? I'm trying to set you free tonight. So, Daniel, listen, I'm telling you about courage. This is the king who's already threatened to kill everybody. He says, now you're a king of kings. That's not flattery. He didn't flatter him. You'll be able to tell that by what he says next about what's going on. Watch this. The God of heaven has given you the kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't believe that. He believes he did it by his own brilliance, his own power, his military genius, and the gods of the earth, the Babylonian gods. See, sure, that's just evolution, right? Evolution teaches man came out of the dirt by random chance, out of the ocean, still made out of chemicals, it's all the same. out of random chance, and up came people. Well, the Babylonian version was up came gods. But give evolution enough time and reincarnation enough time through the trip, and you'll finally make into a god with a little g, they tell us. But I'd like to put your hearts at ease, and those of you that have been hearing out of Tulsa and Dallas, that we're gods with a little g, and that's why what we say is going to happen. Let me just tell you right now, you're not a god now. You're never going to be a god. You're a son of God. You are man created in the image of God, and nowhere in the Bible does it ever promise that angels or us are ever going to be gods, little g or capital G. And if you continue thinking that, the word God and you are going to come into very close contact very soon, because God is going to bring you to task on it. So repent from such arrogance of thinking that you, especially those of you that are trying to make yourselves into gods. Read the Bible. That's a pretty tall... Have you ever read about this God in this book? I'd say that's a fairly tall order. And if you can't tell there's an infinite chasm between you and Jesus, infinite, either you're not reading the same book I'm reading, or your pride and arrogance is such... I understand that kind of pride and arrogance. Remember, I told you what I was. Back in those days, I understand you if you still are there. But I'm trying to encourage you. It's much more fun on the other side. Okay? See, no longer... See, it was tough playing God, because, man, they were shooting at me from all directions. Yeah, everybody likes to get the arrogant guy, don't they? You know, the prig. Everybody likes to get him and see him get his comeuppance, right? Tough playing God. No matter how smart you are, someone's smarter somewhere. How can anyone be smarter than you if you're God? I don't care what kind of athlete you are. If you're a God, I don't care how fast you are, someone can outrun you, someone can outjump you, someone can outshoot you. Someone can throw farther, someone can catch better. How can this be if you're a God? So see, when you try to play God, man, it gets tough. Because your practical experience and your doctrines are constantly rubbing each other wrong. The God of heaven has given it to you. Now, hey, observe then, it's very important that Daniel Rydolph makes sure that Nebuchadnezzar understands. See, Nebuchadnezzar believes it's his gods, the gods of Babylon, that has given him the kingdom. It's their basic pagan doctrine that the reason they were able to conquer all these people is the Babylonian gods conquered the gods of the other nations. And Daniel has just given quite a revelation. Actually, it's the God of heaven, not plural gods, just one. From up there, not down here. And he just gave it to you. That ought to blow some of your minds. Why would God give a slob like Nebuchadnezzar the kingdom of Babylon? Same reason he gave your wicked boss the division job or the district job. God puts one up and puts one down and puts in authority the basest of men. Well, see, we don't believe that. We think, hey, look at me. I got the promotion. Paul, you know why I got the promotion? I'm so much smarter than you. That's why. Of course. And I press around the office. And my wife. Can't wait to run into your wife. Oh, I'm so sorry your husband didn't get that promotion and mine did. And we try to bask in the glory of our husband. I'm just talking about things in general tonight, having fun. He says he gave it to you. Now observe, a gift, see, that means just, did you ask for it, Neb? No. See, God just gave it to you. Did you ask the God of heaven for these kingdoms? No. Isn't it odd you didn't ask the God of heaven, but he gave it to you? We call that grace. Grace. And none of you would have selected Nebuchadnezzar. I wouldn't have selected Nebuchadnezzar. I would have selected me in the old days. I understood Nebuchadnezzar. I understood Daniel. Alexander the Great. I was a poor man's Alexander the Great. I just hadn't conquered the world yet. But I had it in mind. Tom, do you understand where I'm coming from? You bet you do. Tom and I, we've talked. See, Tom back there may look sweet and everything, but he used to be, and he is, but he used to be just like I was. And see, a lot of you were too. You just didn't have the arrogance and confidence in yourself to try it. You know what I mean? You had the same wicked heart. You just didn't have enough pride to think you could pull it off. My problem was, Ron, I had the pride to think I could do it, and I was having a hard time understanding why I was meeting so many obstacles on my way to the top. Did any of you ever hear of me before? You know, you didn't, did you? It's obvious I was having trouble achieving what my arrogance told me I could do. God has got his ways, hasn't he? Of humbling even the basest. Now look what he says in verse 38. And wherever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heavens, has he given unto your hand, and has made you ruler over them all. You are the head of gold. Now, let me just say this to you for a moment. I want you to observe that verse 38 is a condensed version of the same commission God gave Adam. You look at that very carefully. He gave him dominion over the world and the animals and the birds. Did you see it? Naturally, when you rule for God, when God puts you on the throne, he puts everything under you. Now, the fact that the Babylonians never did conquer the entire world and all the animals and the birds didn't answer to Nebuchadnezzar, the point was God gave him the decree for that, to do that, to accomplish that. However, Nebuchadnezzar, as we'll continue reading in a few chapters, you know, in a few weeks, we'll find out that he got hung up on some pride trips so bad that when God got through with him, you know, by the time they kind of got it straight between them, which one of them was God and which one of them was only a king of kings, well, Nebuchadnezzar was almost dead and didn't have time to do and carry out what God... But the point is that God gave him the authority to do this. Nebuchadnezzar, you are the head of gold. Now, wait, some of you think, oh, Daniel's old apple polisher. I mean, the prettiest thing on the whole statue is that head of gold. But let me tell you, when Daniel said that, Nebuchadnezzar was not thrilled. May I, moreover, make sure you understand, absolute and total consternation grabbed him like a vice. Why, Brother Floyd? We just read it. The stone cut out of the mountain without hand hit the statue, the image, on its feet, and the whole statue collapsed, and it broke into such little pieces that even the wind could carry it away. He just said, Nebuchadnezzar, you know that fine-looking head of gold that you saw at the top of the statue that fell and broke into millions of pieces and the wind blew it over? That's you, boy. See, what? You got it, hadn't you? See, you, Nebuchadnezzar, are the head of gold. Now, verse 39. Now, after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to you, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. Now watch this. I want to show you a simple Bible principle. I think you can see it from these two verses. I want you to see that in the Bible, and quite frankly, it's true today. It's true of you. You just don't know it. But I'm going to tell you, Paul, and I've got a bunch of Pauls in here tonight, and I keep speaking to each one of you. I'm on a Paul jag, okay? Paul and Paul and Paul. Everywhere I look, I'm catching eyes of a Paul. See, in the Scriptures, and even today, and especially amongst Oriental or semi-Oriental people, a king and his kingdom are synonymous. They're synonymous. Let me just give you a simple idea. The Third Reich. I just said the Third Reich. What every one of you think of instantly. I can tell you. I can write down on a piece of paper three guesses, and I'll get every one of you. Adolf Hitler, a swastika, or someone goose-stepping. When I said the Third Reich, I guarantee you I nailed every one of you. In other words, it's inseparable. It's inseparable. When I say Adolf Hitler, you think of a swastika. You think of men goose-stepping. You know, crematoriums in Jewish camps. You know what I mean? There's just a few things that are going to quickly click into your mind. If I said Richard the Lionhearted, you're going to think of England. If I said England, the king of England at the time of the Crusades, you're going to think of Richard the Lionhearted. You know what I mean? These things are inseparably tied together in our minds. If I say President Reagan, you think of the United States. If I show you the White House, you think of President Reagan. These things go together. You see what I'm getting at? Now, from these two verses, you can tell this biblically. First of all, the last part of verse 38, you are the head of gold. That's the king, okay? The man is the head of gold. But notice what's said right after that. And after you, that's a person, shall arise, look at this, another kingdom. Did you see that? When he said, after you shall arise another kingdom, he didn't say after your kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar and the kingdom of Babylon are inseparable. Do you see what I'm getting at? It's okay if someone nods and lets me know that you got the point. Okay, I need a little encouragement. You know, I'm a teacher. I have to know how, whether we're coming over. Okay, good. You got it. Now, listen, listen. These are devastating things to tell a king. See, kings, do you remember when the wise men came in to see him in the last, earlier part of the chapter? Oh, king, what did they say to him? Live forever. Okay, now, they didn't really believe he would live forever when they said that, other than through reincarnation, okay, and Babylonians believed in it. So the reincarnation would be through his offspring. See, Babylonian doctrine has always been that the father somehow mysteriously, through reproduction, is part of his son. Okay? And that's why in that part of the world, you know, where these doctrines still are prevalent, that worst thing that can happen to you is you die without a son. I mean, for you, that's the end of the reincarnation cycle. It depends on which particular part of the culture you're in. You know, when you teach reincarnation, you know, they're just like Christians. Each group's got its own little special twist to it. You know what I mean? All of them don't agree with that particular version of reincarnation, but a lot of them do carry that. Okay? So when they said live forever, what they meant was through reincarnation, through his children, through reproduction. In other words, that he would come back in his son. Okay? Somehow. And so when you tell the most powerful ruler on the earth, your kingdom's not going to last very much longer. And not only that, the one that whips you isn't even going to last all that long. Your kingdom's going to fall. There's going to be another one after you. And then there's going to be another one after it. And there's going to be another one after it. I mean, kings like to think they will establish 1,000 years of peace. Adolf Hitler said that. Charlemagne said that. You hear what I'm saying? Napoleon. That's exactly what Napoleon intended to do with Europe. 1,000 years of peace. You hear what I'm saying? Everybody wants to be the Messiah. All right? Well, Nebuchadnezzar has just learned through Daniel, he is not the Messiah. Okay? Did you get it? Your kingdom is going to come to a screeching halt. You've got to have courage to say that. Okay? Now, observe, God has already given Daniel instantaneous favor with Nebuchadnezzar in that he's going to tend to believe Daniel because Daniel did tell him what the dream was. You know, when you tell someone what they dreamed, even if you tell them something they don't want to hear, they're going to tend to pay pretty close attention to what you're saying. You have credibility. I may not like what you're saying, but I'm going to just about have to deal with it. Because how in the world could that guy know what I dreamed? So I'm showing you how God has pulled all the strings in this thing, giving Nebuchadnezzar this dream, and then telling Daniel what it meant. This is, there'll be another one in third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth, and a fourth kingdom, and it'll be strong as iron, it says in verse 40. For as much as iron breaks in pieces and subdues all things, and as iron breaks all these, it shall break in pieces and bruise. Now watch this. And whereas you saw the feet and the toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as you saw the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of the iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. Another way of saying it, part strong and part weak. Okay? And whereas you saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not stick, adhere, one to another, even as iron doesn't mix with clay. Okay? Verse 44. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed. Whew! What a contrast! He just got through telling Nebuchadnezzar, now there's going to be your kingdom, shunk, it's going to get chomped down by a kingdom of silver. Shunk, and that one's going to get chomped down by a kingdom of brass. And chunk, that one's going to get chomped down by a kingdom of iron. None of these kingdoms are going to last very long. However, the God of heaven, you know, the one that gave me this dream, the interpretation of this dream, remember I told you about him? Well, he's going to establish a kingdom after this miry toe kingdom, an iron kingdom, and it will never end. So Neb, do you see the inference? So Neb, if you want on the winning side and to get hold of a kingdom that shall never end, don't try to make it Babylon. you need to come to the kingdom of the God of heaven. Do you see the pitch? That's the obvious pitch that we're hearing. We're hearing the Daniel version of the gospel, if you please. Not only is this a prophecy, the gospel is tied up in it. It's a call to repent. Okay? It says, it says, God of heaven will set up that kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. He says, see, all those other kingdoms got left to some other people. Some other nation. He says, but not this one. And it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms. What a contrast. It shall stand forever. For as much as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, that is supernatural, and it broke in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, the gold, the great God has made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter. Hey, pretty much he's saying, the great God has honored you, Nebuchadnezzar. He has selected you of all people on this earth to receive this dream and the interpretation of it. Okay? This God that you hadn't been paying any attention to is interested in you, boy. You got it? I understand that. That's just about what the Lord said to me one day. I'm interested in you, boy. You know? All right. He says, he's made known to you what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation of it is sure. Have you got that? Daniel says, period, end of report. I'm not going to add, and I'm not going to subtract. This is the way it's going to be. Now, I want to talk to you about it, and I'd like for us to look at the overhead. And here's a overhead of what we just read. The Gentiles in prophecy, here's a diagram of the image that he saw. And in chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the head was gold, the chest and the arms were silver, the stomach and the upper part of the legs that we call the thigh, you know, from above the knee, about mid-knee on up, is all part of brass. Now the two legs were solid iron. Now listen, this is very important. Miss this, you miss it. But observe that the feet and the toes were totally different. They were a mixture of iron and clay, and therefore there was a weakness inherent in them because you just can't mix iron and clay. Okay? So what we're saying then is, and we're going to see this as we study tonight, that between the legs and the feet is a prophetic gap. Now listen to me carefully. What we just saw and read about then was the prophecy of the great image and the smiting stone. Okay? God's purpose here in this dream and the interpretation of this dream is to show Nebuchadnezzar and all the wise men of Babylon and all the wise people living today that will believe this, that hear it and believe it. See, that makes you wise. God is showing us here that He, the God of heaven, rules over all and is sovereign over all the Gentile kingdoms. That when these wicked kingdoms come to power, it didn't surprise God. He told us way in advance that they were coming. Okay? Now, Nebuchadnezzar is going to tend to believe it because he began with Nebuchadnezzar. The first part, he knows is true. And besides, he's going to tend to believe it anyway because Daniel knew what he dreamed. Now, not only that, not only is this going to teach us that God rules over the Gentile kingdoms, but the second thing is, and this is the theme then, don't you understand, of what we're learning, not only does he rule over the Gentile kingdoms, he rules over and is sovereign over their gods. Their gods. Got it? You got it. Now, I want you to note, as we go back through these verses, one verse at a time, while looking at our overhead, that the interpretation is going to move progressively from the top to the bottom of the image. You notice that originally. And what that represents is the passing of time. Now, you can tell that if you think for a moment. He said, and after you're the head of gold, that's now, you know, Daniel's day. That's now. After you will be another kingdom, the passing of time. And that's the silver. So as we go down the image, we're progressing in time, okay? Thus, the upper parts of this image that Nebuchadnezzar saw and that you're looking at on the screen are portraying earlier history. And the bottom or lower part of this image represents later history. Now, we learn in verse 28, therefore, that this prophecy, therefore this image, which is symbolic of the prophecy, don't you see, is for the latter days, the latter days. Therefore, the very, since the latter days are the end of it, you know, the end of Gentile domination of the Jewish peoples, then those feet and toes have to represent the latter days. Do you understand what I'm getting at? The feet and toes must represent the latter days. And I hope this isn't too swift for you, but if there's 2 feet, and there are, then there's 10, count them, 10 toes. You say, so what? In other words, it said toes. But you see, the problem is, I can count. When it said toes, and it's an image of a person, I know how many toes are going to be there, don't I? It doesn't even have to tell me. I know. See, when it said legs, there's legs on the statue, I didn't ask if it was 3 or 4. Right? With great brilliance, because of 6.5 years at the university, I knew too. No. You know what I'm getting? I'm just trying to show you the obvious. The very obvious. And I'm trying to tell you, that may be obvious, but if you miss that, you get the wrong understanding of the image, and many people do. Okay? Now, therefore, thus, the feet and toes represent the latter and final form of the existence of the last empire that's represented by the lower portion of the legs. In other words, now listen to me. I'm going to tell you now, and we'll prove it in partially tonight and also in later sessions. Historically, we're able to identify these kingdoms, and we're also able to do it from Daniel. Later on in the book of Daniel, we'll come to chapter 2 and to chapter 7. And in those chapters, they will spell out for us and tell us exactly which kingdoms these are. And it won't tell us the name of the fourth one. But we don't need to know the name of the fourth one, because all we have to do is check out history. After Babylon, who was the next great kingdom that conquered them? Represented by the silver and gold. Do you see what I'm getting at? All you got to do is go home and get out your encyclopedia or any history book you've got, and you'll find out it was the Medo-Persian Empire. Okay? That was the silver. Then, the kingdom that conquered the Medo-Persia Empire, and oh, everybody knows what that was, it was Alexander the Great with the Macedonian Greek army that he put together. Remember, his father was Philip of Macedonia. And they united the kingdoms of Macedonia and Greece and wielded it into an army, and in 10 years, he conquered the world. Alexander conquered the world. In other words, I'm trying to tell you, it's very easy historically to know what the brass represents and who the brass represents. It's the next kingdom, the next world kingdom. Notice every one of them said they would be the world power. Okay? Now the kingdom, the world power that defeated the Greeks in 146 B.C. was Rome. Okay? So I'm telling you the answers now, and during the next weeks as we study more and more, we'll be gleaning and gathering more data and superposing it on this image. And we'll keep showing you the image, you know, and as we build onto our mosaic. But all we're looking at right now is the simple picture, the skeleton outline, okay? Now, you can see on here Daniel's vision 7. And let me just mention this to you briefly in passing about Daniel chapter 7. In Daniel 7, we find a creature, a beast, and it's, as you read about these beasts, the first one is a lion, and it's not just an ordinary lion, it's got wings, okay? And the second one is a bear, and the third one is a leopard, and it's a way-out leopard with 4 heads and 4 wings, okay? And then comes a weird beast. It is really weird. It's kind of a composite of the others, but it's got 10 horns on its head. And just about the time you get through counting those 10, a little hickey starts growing up on his head, and doggone if it isn't a little old teeny horn growing there. And so he gets another horn, all right? So, and it says that this beast, and it doesn't tell you exactly what it looks like there, but it says that rascal's got bad teeth, and that they're made out of, would you believe it, iron. Okay? Now, observe, the point is, see, that Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 are talking about the same four kingdoms. And I want to tell you why the symbolism is different. Now listen to me. Notice when we first began to read about this image in here in chapter 2, in verse 31, Daniel said that this image was a great image and that its brightness, its brilliance was excellent. In other words, it was a fantastic image. And then, notice, in verse 31 it says, the form of it was terrible. Now, that's not a mistranslation. It's just that since King James was written, the word terrible, compared to what it means to us today, has slightly changed. Okay? Today, if we were translating it, we wouldn't probably use the word terrible in modern English. We would say, let me tell you what you could have translated that in King James Day, actually, that would also mean the same thing. Many times in the Old Testament, I'm nodding my head, that means this is right, and you'll remember this the minute I tell you. And if not, get your Strong's Concordance and check me out. I challenge you, because I already have, and I know you're not going to find it different. That many times in the Old Testament, it will refer to God and say that He's terrible. He's terrible, especially in Psalms. And you read that, you say, terrible. Now see, it's because the word has slightly changed connotation of meaning. It is not a mistranslation. It was dead on in King James. They literally could equally have translated that word there for terrible in King James Day, that God is awful. You say, awful? I would never say God was awful. Well, we probably all have when we were mad at Him, right? but you know, when we're a little more rational, Bill, we wouldn't. Well, see, the word awful in King James Day about 400 years ago meant awe-inspiring. Awe-inspiring. So the word in English, in other words, the English language has changed slightly. So really today, rather than to say the form of it was terrible, probably awesome. Awesome. So have you got it? It's a breathtaking image. Not like my miserable sketch up there, you know, on the overhead. It said it was brilliant. It's dazzling. Look, if you had that image made in your honor, you'd take everybody in town over to see it. You know what I mean? Now, the point I'm driving at from that, listen to me, the point that I'm driving at from that is this image represents the Gentile world powers that would have dominion over the earth in succession, one after the other, as man views the empires of the world. Magnificent! Wow! Isn't it great? Chapter 7 of Daniel, God talks about the same four empires and gives us His view and vantage point of the four great world powers. And His portrait, His view of them is they are wild, rapacious, meat-eating, devouring each other carnivores that just claw and tear at everything they can get. Man's view and God's view just aren't the same. And the Lord willing, by the time we get to chapter 7, we'll all have it. I'm going to hand you out a sheet, a harmony, Paul, and this one will be of Daniel chapter 2, Daniel chapter 7, Revelation 13, and Revelation 17, where these same four beasts, these same nations are described, and we're going to put more and more meat on the bones as we gather and glean more and more so that we can really be confident of our interpretation when we finish. Moreover, Robert, if I'm wrong, you'll all catch me, okay? I'm going to arm you with the tools from the Scriptures, you know, that we can all know why we believe what we believe. I want you to see here in verse 34 that he said, you saw a stone cut without hands which smote the image on the feet. Now observe, the way the image was brought down was a sudden, swift, violent blow to the feet. Now, actually, a casual study, you'll find out this image is top-heavy. Think for a moment. The head is gold. Gold has a specific gravity. Now, specific gravity just means how much... Okay, for you technical people, I'm a scientist, but I'm going to give you a layman version of specific gravity. So you scientists in here, give me a break. Basically, specific gravity is just saying how much heavier is this thing than an equal volume of water. Okay? The specific gravity of gold is 19. That's an abstract number. It just means whatever size you've got of water, if you had a volume of gold the same size, it'd be 19 times heavier. Okay, for example, a cubic foot of water weighs about 62, 64 pounds, depending on whether it was salt water, fresh water. Most of you are stunned by that don't know anything about science. 62.4. A cubic foot of gold would weigh 19 times that. Okay? What I'm saying is, you know all these Western movies you see when they're robbing the gold and they're picking up all this gold and throwing it around? If a cubic foot of water, you know, a foot by one foot, look, that's about a foot right there. That's not that big, y'all. It weighs 62 pounds if it's water. If it was gold, 20 times 60, you know, that's pretty heavy. 19, but you know, just round it off, that's kind of heavy. You're not going to just be picking up gold and running out of Fort Knox with it. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Okay. So the top has a specific gravity of 19. The arms and chest are silver. That has a specific gravity of 10.5. Okay. In other words, it's 10.5 times heavier than an equal volume of water. The belly and the thighs were made of brass. Brass has a specific gravity. Depends. Now, brass is an alloy of copper and zinc. And its specific gravity has a little range, but the average is about 8.5. Iron has there's different kinds of iron, wrought iron, you know. Some of you people know about that. But, you know, a good average would be about 7.8 for specific gravity. So this thing is really top heavy. So if you knock its feet out, I mean, she comes down fast, okay? And that's exactly what happened here. I want to call your attention to that. Now, remember, God is getting something over to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, his god is Marduk, the great mountain. And they believe that their gods come from the mountain and the earth. And actually, he's going to blow old Neb's basic religious doctrines right out. He says, now there's a stone cut out of a mountain. No hands. Now their gods had hands. See? So Neb's mental picture is, this is supernatural. Okay? He's got it. And in the Babylonian way of thinking, okay, the wind was the breath of Marduk. In other words, the breath of a god. He was the chief god. Observe that when it was smashed to pieces, the wind blew it all away like the chaff. And he's already started off saying, now it's the God of heaven that's doing all this. Okay? And then he says, in the last part of verse 35, no place was found for them anymore, and the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Many times in the Bible, a mountain is used also to represent a kingdom. Now Nebuchadnezzar would have understood that. The stone grew and filled the earth. After it wiped out the image, P.S. Neb, you're the head on the image. Oh, you got it? Nebuchadnezzar clearly understands from this that Daniel is saying a supernatural rock made by the God of heaven, okay, produced by the God of heaven, is going to smash all the great kingdoms of the earth that come in succession one after the other, okay? And that then it'll become a mountain, this stone will, and fill the whole earth. Now that stone, as most of you know from Scripture, is Jesus, the King, the chief cornerstone, the stone rejected by the builders. On and on in Scriptures, the Messiah, Jesus, is referred to as the rock, not Peter, okay? Jesus. And remember, we already learned that a king and his kingdom are synonymous. So when it says the stone breaks the image, that's the king. And then when it fills up the earth, you know, and everything, that's the kingdom, okay, that the king brings with him after putting an end to the final form in the latter days of all Gentile dominion. Okay, now, let's talk about the image itself. Observe in the interpretation in verse 38. Or rather, verse 39, after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to you, made of silver, it says. In what way would it be inferior? Well, first of all, silver is not as precious a metal, you know, just in the natural, as gold. It's not as heavy. It's not as lustrous. But it says it's more inferior. Now, obviously, that can't mean in terms of military strength, can it? Because the silver empire, the empire that... See, we know which empire this is, because the gold is Babylon. Who conquered Babylon? The Medo-Persian Empire. Now, the Medo-Persians, the Medians and the Persians were cousins. Okay, they were closely related. And under the great king Cyrus in 550 BC, Cyrus united those two peoples, these two cousins, into one kingdom. When he first did it, the Medes were kind of running the show. You know, it was a kingdom, but let's put it this way, the best jobs and the best general positions and everything went to the Medes. And you'll find it referred to in the Bible during that period of time as the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. Medes first. You know, like you're going to start a company, you know, you want your name first on the marquee, right? Later in the Bible and later in history, the Persians began to get the upper hand with their cousins in that empire, and then in the Bible, you'll find it referred to as the kingdom of the Persians and the Medes. You got the difference. The Persians got to the top of it. Okay? Now, notice the beauty in the image and what it portrayed. The chest of silver and the arms of silver portrayed the Medo-Persian Empire. One empire, the chest, one empire with two branches, Mede and Persian, right hand and left hand. See, it's a real neat little way God's got to do in these little things. I always get to... Now, inferior in what way? Several ways inferior, though. First of all, in splendor. But let me be brutal with you. And for some of you, this is going to be very difficult by the time I get to the last one. You see, actually, the Babylonian Empire was really more like God intended governments to be. One man is king, and his word is absolute law. That is a superior, biblically, is a superior form of government. When the Medes and the Persians came to power, and you can tell this by the scriptures as well as by secular history, in the book of Ezra, for example, it tells you about this. The Median-Persian king had seven counselors, and there was a vote taken. You got me? In other words, we get more folks into the voting situation here. Inferior form of government. I know most of you don't realize that, but you'll enjoy the kingdom a lot better than you will America. Okay? I guarantee, and you'll like it a whole lot better than Soviet Russia. Okay, so just in case you think, you know, that I'm leaning the other way. And then he says, now after that will come a third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over the earth. Now the kingdom that defeated the Medo-Persians again is Alexander the Great. Now observe that this is a stomach and the upper portion of the legs, the two thighs. It says the thighs. So that's down to right about mid-leg. Again, it's the same idea. The single kingdom that Alexander started was comprised of two peoples, the Macedonians and the Greeks, and he wielded it into one empire. Okay? I might add there could even be a second meaning of that. When Alexander died, he had some children, but they never got to sit on the throne. They were assassinated pretty soon. Actually, the kingdom divided into four parts under four of his generals, and we'll read about that in the Bible in just a few chapters on down. Okay? It's going to tell us that. But quite frankly, only of those four kingdoms that their generals divided Alexander's kingdom into, only two of them ever amounted to anything. You know, were ever really powerful and big and rich. One was the Egyptian portion of the kingdom under Ptolemy, the Ptolemies, and the other one was the Syrian portion of the kingdom under what they called the Seleucid kings that ruled over Syria. So it could have reference to that also. I'm just trying to tell you guys what this stuff's talking about.